Strawberry reed mustard is an endangered plant found in the northeast corner of Utah in the Uinta Basin. And we were going to look at the parent material, soil, and landscape characteristics of this plant. It is characterized, or has been classified, as Glaucocarpum sufratescens. It has also been classified as Chinacrombes sufratescens and Hesperodanthus sufratescens. It's on the Federal Register of Endangered Species, and all 7 known populations of strawberry reed mustard occur in the Uinta Basin. It's endemic to the calcareous shales of the Green River Formation, and this area is rich in natural gas, oil, and oil shale. And the area is dotted with hundreds of oil wells already, and oil companies are hoping to develop the area further, including mining of the oil shale. So our goal was to determine the parent material, soil, and landscape characteristics associated with the strawberry reed mustard to assure its survival and proliferation in the face of further development. So to elucidate parameters for plant reestablishment, we are conducting extensive field observation, soil sampling with laboratory characterization, and descriptive and statistical analysis of the data. And this image of Utah shows the Uinta Basin in this northeast corner and our soil sampling area. So far, we've sampled 4 locations, including Upper Big Pack Mountain, Lower Big Pack Mountain, Johnson Draw, and Badland Cliffs. So the strawberry reed mustard seems to grow where nothing else does. It seems to occupy a unique niche in the soil environment. And this picture here, you can see the typical strata in which we see strawberry reed mustard growing. Associated vegetation includes mountain mahogany, juniper, snakeweed, pygmy sage, arrowleaf balsam root, sulfur flower, buckwheat, Mormon tea, wheatgrass, shad scale, and pinyon pine. In non-strawberry reed areas, we see black sage dominating the landscape, and we have not yet found any black sage occurring in strawberry reed mustard areas. Some of the associated vegetation in the non-strawberry reed areas is the same as in the strawberry reed areas, but there is a number of species that we do not find at both locations. So for extensive field observation, we've been documenting vegetation, slope, aspect, landform, surface features, plant dimensions, and GPS coordinates. In October 2010 and June 2011, we sampled from both strawberry reed areas and non-strawberry reed areas. We excavated soil pits to bedrock at least 50 centimeters from the central plant in order to not disturb the roots of the plant. We identified the parent material, described root distribution and soil morphology, and sampled by genetic horizon. Here's a photo showing a use of a Dobbenmeyer frame to sample 50 centimeters away from a strawberry reed mustard. Here's a photo of a strawberry reed mustard plot on Big Pack Mountain, again showing this whitish strata where we find strawberry reed mustard growing. Our soil test pits were shallow and rocky. You can see we already hit bedrock here at a very shallow depth, and we also excavated very small soil pits to minimize disturbance of the area. So the laboratory analyses we've completed, we've analyzed 114 samples that were collected in October 2010 and June 2011 for soluble elements and pH. The 47 samples that we collected in October 2010 have also been analyzed for rock fragments, particle size, distribution, available phosphorus, organic carbon, total nitrogen, and total mineral elements. And here's a beautiful picture of our Badland Cliffs sampling site. For descriptive and statistical analysis, we created box plots and bar charts of the column means. We ran Mann-Whitney ranked some tests where our data were not normally distributed and we had unequal variances. When our data was normally distributed and we had equal variances, then we ran t-tests. So we conducted 2 comparisons. We looked at pedon-weighted averages for strawberry reed mustard versus non-strawberry reed mustard sites. Then we also looked at the horizons that had the most roots in each pedon and compared strawberry reed sites to non-strawberry reed sites. This is a picture here of a sugarweed mustard plot at Badland Cliffs, and you can see clearly the contrast between the sugarweed site and the non-sugarweed site. This was taken at Lower Big Pack Mountain. In the background, you can again see this whitish strata where we were finding sugarweed mustard. The statistical results for pH and soluble elements for the weighted averages show that pH values were higher in sugarweed mustard soils than in shrubberyweed at alpha 0.05, whereas the soluble calcium concentrations were lower in the shrubberyweed soils. Soluble copper, lead, potassium, and nickel were higher in shrubberyweed soils than in non-shrubberyweed soils, but at alpha 0.1. When we looked at horizons with the most roots, we found soluble potassium and pH values to be higher in shrubberyweed soils, and soluble phosphorus concentrations were lower in shrubberyweed soils. So here's a box plot of our weighted pH averages for obtained from 1:1 soil water extracts, and you can see here how the pH values in shrubberyweed sites were higher than in non-shrubberyweed. And this box plot shows weighted calcium, soluble calcium concentrations to be lower in the shrubberyweed sites and higher in the non-shrubberyweed sites. So the results for total mineral elements, when we looked at weighted averages, total phosphorus concentrations were lower in shrubberyweed soils at alpha 0.1. And when comparing horizons with the most roots, we found that total lithium concentrations were higher in shrubberyweed soils. These are three photos of some plant species that we found on our sampling sites. So this is a bar chart of the column means showing weighted total phosphorus. It was lower in the shrubberyweed mustard sites. And here we have, when comparing total lithium concentrations in horizons with the most roots, we found lithium to be higher in shrubberyweed sites. When we looked at available phosphorus, we found that for weighted averages, available phosphorus concentrations were significantly lower in shrubberyweed sites than in non-shrubberyweed sites. For particle size distribution, we found that in the majority of the soil samples, the texture for shrubberyweed mustard soils was a silt loam, and most non-shrubberyweed mustard soils had a loam texture. At all 18 of the shrubberyweed mustard sites that we sampled, the parent material was shale. At 8 of the non-shrubberyweed sites, the parent material was sandstone, while at 3 of the non-shrubberyweed sites, the parent material was shale. There was one non-shrubberyweed mustard site that we're considering to be a potential shrubberyweed mustard site, and that's based on the parent material, which was shale, the landform, the surface features, and associated vegetation that we found at that site. So our conclusions are that some soil chemical properties differ between shrubberyweed and non-shrubberyweed sites. Shrubberyweed habitat includes shallow soils, typically from only 9 to 39 centimeters. The shrubberyweed grows in a very particular type of strata, as you could clearly see from the photos. Parent materials differ between shrubberyweed and non-shrubberyweed sites. Our thought is that the shale might serve as a barrier to slow the downward movement of water out of the soil profile, thereby making the water more available to the shrubberyweed plant. It was interesting to note that in one of our soil pits, there was actually free water sitting on top of the shale. We also think that the shrubberyweed may also be able to tolerate low nutrient status soils, thereby successfully inhabiting seemingly inhospitable areas. This is a photo of our field crew for our June 2011 sampling, minus our field crew member who's taking the photo, which was a friend of mine from Montana who volunteered to come and help us for just to have some fun. And this is another photo of the shrubberyweed mustard plant. So for further research, we'll be conducting additional sampling, and that will be determined pending the results of the remaining lab analyses. We may also sample from more potential shrubberyweed sites, and we plan to analyze the soil mineralogy. We want to develop a decision-making tool to identify potential sugar-reed mustard habitat and to use remote sensing to be able to predict potential habitat at a larger spatial scale. And we want to extend a thank you to Matt Lewis, a Master of Science student in ecology at Utah State University, for his assistance, and also to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service for funding this project. Thank you. Yes.
You had a relationship with the actual geology, and I was just curious, is that also associated with where they're going to mine the shales or not?
Yeah, well, most of the shale in the area is oil shale, and that's the parent material on which the sugar-reed mustard grows, so therefore it's threatening the survival of the sugar-reed.
So there's a correlation with where they're going to mine the
area. Yes. Yes. Well, that's a good question. It's certainly something we'll look at. Most of our observations thus far with the water content of the soil and the shale has just been, you know, our observations in the field. Where in some cases, the soil did seem more moist in the sugar-reed soils that were sitting on top of the shale. But what was, you know, even more apparent, especially in that one soil pit, was there was actually free water standing on top of the shale at the rooting depth of the sugar reed. Yes.
How extensive horizontal root system
is it? Like you had in your profile. Well, it's not rhizomatous. It's kind of a taproot system. I would say probably. Well, we didn't sample right where the plant was. We were trying to avoid disturbing the roots, so we didn't obtain a measurement of that. But we were 50 centimeters away, and we didn't encounter the sugar-reed mustard root system. Any other questions?
I have one question.
Yeah.
I didn't quite, with your sampling, how did you actually choose your locations for your sugar-reed mustard and on?
Well, we have so few populations of them, and they grow in such limited areas, and there's not even that many plants at each area. So Matt Lewis from Utah State University helped us decide which areas we should sample. Mostly we sampled from areas where it was obvious sugar-reed mustard growing, and then conversely we would sample from areas where it obviously was not growing, it had different surface features. And
were
so
areas paired in any way?
No, they're not. They're just in adjacent areas. But like next time we sample, we may go ahead and sample more sites where it looks like potentially that sugar reed could be growing but isn't growing, and then maybe do some analysis of variance on that data to see if there's differences between the potential sites and the non-sugar-reed sites.